Morning. Violence and conflict have been a part of the human experience almost from the beginning. You think about it, Cain and Abel were the beginning of conflict and violence. All because Abel outdid Cain, Cain decided he wanted to kill his brother. Now, the court buildings that we're familiar with were built to try to deal with the chaos that we find in our world. And one of the first questions I want us to kind of think through is, how well is it doing? How well does it work? Are there court decisions that you're not happy with? The Dred Scott versus Sanford 1857 is one I think is a pretty highly recognized one that people know about. It was Dred Scott was held that African Americans, whether free or slaves, could not be considered American citizens. Overruling the Missouri Compromise, barred laws that would have made slaves free, and all but guaranteed that there would be no political salvation for slavery, the problem of slavery. And the opinion included this ridiculous parade of horribles that would appear if Scott was made an American citizen. Unspeakable scenarios like African Americans being able to go on vacation, being able to hold public meetings and exercise their freedom of speech. Does that get your goat a bit? How about the Exxon Shipping Company versus Baker? The oil spill that happened, one of the biggest disasters that we've had in our time, really. After years and years of litigation, Exxon was finally held responsible and was told to pay $5 billion to fix the problem, the damages that they had done. Then the Supreme Court came in and said that was too much and said they only had to pay $500 million. Not only did Exxon evade the billions in damages, but because of the Supreme Court's decision, their stock actually went up $23 billion that day, in 2 days. Judges in courthouses send people to jail, execute them, try to carry out justice, but we continue to see an increase in violence and chaos and conflict in our world. Jesus offers us another way. He offers us the non-retaliation way to love our enemies instead of loving those who are already in our inner circle. What would happen in our personal relationships if we followed the way that Jesus lays out? Instead of trying to get even and loving only those who love us in return, if we accepted his ethic of universal love and loving our enemies, what would our life be like? What would the world be like? I don't know how many of you guys grew up going to camps, summer camps, church camps. Church camp was a big part of my life growing up, and part of the fun of that was all the pranks that would go on there during that week. By the end of the week, you have expended all your supplies of pranks that you can do. And it usually has to do with something gross, some smells, messiness, or stickiness. And it always starts off with something simple. A water balloon, tripping somebody, jumping out from behind a corner and yelling boo, scaring somebody. And once you've done anything to somebody, if they're any kind of person, they're going to get back at you for what you've done to them, get even really. And not only do they have to do something to you, it's got to be something a little bit worse than what you did to them. But then they're ahead. And so you've got to do back and do a little bit more than what they did to you. And then they've got to get you back. And it just keeps going and going. And by the end of the week, there are these massive plots going down about getting somebody back for what they've done to you. Huge traps that won't harm, but they're a little bit more than a little bit messy, really. I remember one experience was my dad and my brother were counselors for the 15 to 18-year-olds, the oldest group, and the OVU ambassadors had come to perform some skits and stuff, and they were staying the night with us. And their cabin was like, oh, we want to prank them, and my dad and brother said no until finally they just like, okay, fine. Go ahead and prank them. So they said, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to sneak out at night. We're going to go to their cabin. And we're going to bang on the walls so that they are just scare the daylights out of them, really. So they sneak over. They get up right next to the cabin. and they start banging on the walls for about a solid 10 to 15 seconds, actually. Nothing. No screaming, no yelling, nobody coming out looking to see what happened. So they do it again, a little bit longer this time. Still nobody. Then all of a sudden, people just start running out from the woods, screaming and scaring the cabin of my dad and brother. So bad that this is the 15 to 18 year olds, the oldest that we have. One of them is in tears because he's been scared so bad. Turns out that my dad and brother had warned the ambassador, saying, they're going to pull a prank on you tonight. Well, the ambassadors, being college students, say that can't be happen, really. We got to get them instead of us, them get us, really. So they had hid out in the woods waiting for them to come, really. Those are some of the things that we tend to do that are not so horrible as what's going on in our world. There is this problem going on in other cases that are not so friendly. Even in the Old Testament, God saw that it was needed to be addressed. And so Jesus says, "You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth." And it sounds pretty vicious, really, doesn't it? But it was actually intended to place a limit on the vengeance that you could take on somebody. So if you slam someone's finger in the door, they certainly had the right to slam your finger in the door. But they did not have the right to say, "I'm going to slam your head in the door." You see what I'm saying? There was you did what they did back to you. You didn't go one step further because that would put you ahead. You can only do back to people what they've done to you and no further. There was this effort at eliminating this one-upmanship that's going on here. And so the basic principle was to place limitations on the vengeance that you could take on somebody when they had wronged you, and to keep it from escalating with violence. But Jesus comes and takes this principle and goes to a completely different place. Jesus says, not only do I not want you to respond, I don't want you to respond with vengeance at all. He says, he gives a series of examples that are remarkable, really. If anyone strikes you on the right cheek, turn also to him the other cheek. If anybody makes you carry their load for a mile, carry it another mile. If anybody sues you to take away your coat, just give them all your clothes. And my reaction is probably about the same as yours. You're thinking is, have you lost your mind, Jesus? Do you really think this is going to work, what you've just said to do? And quite a few scholars have recently pointed out that there does seem to be this sort of humor about this, of doing it this way. So he strikes me on the right cheek, and we are probably talking about an insulting blow, an embarrassing blow. So if you insult me, my response is going to be, is that all you got? Is that the best insult, best slap you can give me? Surely, given who I am, you can come up with something better, or you can do something much worse. And if a Roman soldier has the power to make you carry his equipment for a mile, which is pretty heavy actually, and what you would typically do as a Jew in occupied territory is, once you did that, you just dropped the stuff and walked away, because that's all you had to do. But Jesus says, okay, here's what I want you to do. You turn to that guy and you say, you know what, I've been carrying your stuff for a mile. I'm feeling pretty strong. I would love to carry your stuff for another mile. It's been such an honor and a privilege to carry your stuff that this has just been the highlight of my day. Can I carry your stuff for another mile? Or, if somebody sues you and takes your coat, well, as long as you're taking my coat, taking my stuff, just take everything. And at some point, this does get a little embarrassing almost. It's as if Jesus is offering the kind of pranksterism to counter this violence and aggression that's going on. And before we dismiss what Jesus says too quickly, let's remember that what we've been doing up to this point hasn't been working. What we've been doing up to this point has gotten us to where we are today. And it isn't working all that well. That when you respond to violence with violence or insult with insult, you don't get ahead. Nobody ends up getting ahead because we just keep on going back and getting worse and getting worse. And the world falls apart like it is now. So Jesus says, don't get even. Stop it in its tracks. By this kind of winsome, humorous response, he says, if you want to get after me, you're going to have to do a whole lot better than that to get to one-up me on this. And then Jesus comes to the end of this section and he offers probably the most difficult thing of all. He says, you have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbors and hate your enemies. Now, you might have a little trouble finding this in the Old Testament, but you get this idea. This is our natural inclination, is to love those who love us, who are our neighbors, to hate those who hate us, who are our enemies. You love the people of your tribe. You love the people who are in your family. Now, if you love like that, you're just like everyone else in the world, because everyone loves their own group. Everybody loves the people who respond kindly to them, who respond friendly and helpful. When we as Christians, what sets us apart is we love the people who aren't like us, who aren't from our tribe. We love the people who treat us badly and maybe even violently. We love our enemies. And you ask, does he really mean that? Is it really possible to love those who hurt you, who persecute you, who use violence against you with this redeeming love that he's talking about here? My answer is Jesus did it. Luke 23:33-34, this is Jesus going to the cross, and he prays for those who are in the process of killing him. And when they came to the place that is called the skull, they crucified him, and the criminals, one on his right and one on his left. And Jesus said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And they cast lots to divide his garments. Okay, so maybe you don't have enemies, but you do have many who are not of your group, of your tribe, of your circle of friends, who are truthfully outsiders to you. And the question is, are you going to love them? Perhaps the hardest people to love may not even be your enemies, but those irritating people, those irritants. Primarily, the definition of irritant is one who does not know they are an irritant. Everyone here can think of someone who is an irritant. Just don't look beside you and make it obvious, all right? When I think of an irritant, I'm reminded of a colleague that I went to college with. And I'm not going to give you his real name. I'm just going to call him John. It's not John Brandt. It's another John. So when you see John coming, it's pretty obvious that he's coming looking for you when he's coming looking for you. And you think, do I have half an hour I can spare? Because you know it's going to be that long. And John had absolutely no clue the impact that he had on other people. And I remember one time when we were in class, the professor, it was a mid-afternoon class, there's about 12 people in the class, and everybody's pretty resentful, they don't like being in afternoon classes. And so they say to the teacher, can you cancel class so we can watch the lacrosse game, because we want to go support our team. And he said, no, I got another class at another time, I want to keep these classes at the same pace. So they say, okay, what's the fastest pace you can do to give us the notes? And the teacher says, I could probably do it in about 20 minutes. And the students are like, let's go. Let's go for that. So he starts writing on the board as fast as he can. And he turns around to make sure that everyone's following. And one hand is up. John has his hand up. And he says, oh, what's the problem, John? He says, I didn't get that last part. Could you go back and go over that again? So he turns around and he starts lecturing again. Turns around to see and make sure everyone's following along. And guess whose hand is up again? John's. You're going a little too fast. Could you slow it down? And it's at this point that you kind of realize that there's trouble brewing. The teacher turns around again and starts to write, turns around again, and John's hand is up again. Now, any ordinary person would understand that when you place your hand up, there's something happening to the people around you. But John should have noticed, but he doesn't. Everyone around in the room is doing this every time John raises his hand. Oh, I can't believe this. But John doesn't notice it. John is oblivious. because remember, he's an irritant. He doesn't know. The teacher is back writing again, and John's hand goes up, and this time guns and knives come out of the crowd, all focused on John. And John doesn't notice it. So the teacher goes back and starts writing again, and that teacher knew he was saving John's life here. So because of the remaining 15 minutes, he didn't turn around once. The teacher did not turn around to see how his class was doing. And I know, and the teacher knows, that that was rude, but worse things were at stake here that were a bit more important at the time, namely John's well-being. Now, we all know a John. There are a few students, myself included, that didn't become friends with John because he was an easy person to get along with or someone that you wanted to be around all the time, but we befriended him. We tried to guide him along as best we could so that he wasn't bullied. He didn't have a car, so we'd take him to places he needed to go. And it was the Bible division. We were both Bible majors. And so we carried the thought of, you don't just love those who only can love you back. You love the people that are incapable of giving you love in return, whether they're your enemies, whether they're irritants. Jesus says, when you love those who can't return your love, you change the world. And that's a really good idea for us to hold on to. I imagine it this way. Imagine two old Western cowboys, both with their guns pulled, aiming at one another, and they're both afraid to lower their weapon because the other guy might shoot me if I do. And that's kind of been our way of life up to this point, really. We believe that the only way to protect ourselves from violence is to be more violent. The only way to protect ourselves from our enemies is to have more power than they have over us. And that's led our world to disaster. Because we have this ever-escalating war of power and violence, it hardly protects us, though, does it? It's brought us to the brink of oblivion where we are today, where we look and say, what is this world coming to? With that in mind of how things are, it really twists our minds to think of how Jesus overcame. He overcame by letting them kill him instead of fighting back. Jesus suggests that when a person does something to you, that we don't retaliate at all. That we love our enemies instead of making war with them. And that's the big deal as to why Christianity is so odd to the world. Our leader, Jesus, didn't fight back with more violence. Instead, he tells us to do what he did of allow him. Don't fight back. Don't retaliate. Among the teachings in the Sermon on the Mount, this is probably the one that we believe the least and we practice the least. We just don't believe that creative nonviolence and love is actually going to overpower the darkness that's in this world. And that's not a political thing. It's about the individual doing things. How do we expect things to be different on a national or international level when we haven't begun to practice this on a personal level, in our own lives with even one person? So we're quick to retaliate. James 1:19 says, let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. We're too quick to only love those who are of our tribe. Matthew 5:46 through 47 talks about that. For if you love those who love you, what reward do you have? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet only your brothers, what more are you doing than others? Do not even the Gentiles do the same thing? And see, we've come to think everyone else is a threat to us. And until this love of enemies becomes a part of our personal lives, we cannot expect for it to be represented on anything bigger, more than a group, more than a nation, until the individuals are willing to do it. To be a follower of Jesus, to be a Christian, means to love what Jesus loves and to hate what Jesus hates. And it should be pretty clear what Jesus hates is violence. What Jesus hates is needless conflict. In the hate that's going on in our world. But he loves the people that he created. whether they love him back or not. The Bible tells us in our reading today that God causes the rain to fall on the just and the unjust. This may be the biggest challenge as we have of being a follower of Jesus' example. Are we going to be brave enough to be the cowboy that lowers his weapon, believing that something different than violence may happen here? To say, I'm tired of the violence. I'm tired of the retaliation. I'm tired of the hatred. I'm tired of doing what doesn't work. I'm going to try Jesus' way. The way of loving my enemies, as he says. And that's kind of the challenge of the scripture here. To love those who it's not easy to love. To love those who in fact hate you or are trying to hurt you. Who's going to take that challenge? To listen to what Jesus says. You have the opportunity this week to do that. To say, I'm going to do what Jesus says. You have the opportunity now if you need help with these things. We can pray for you. We can help you through these hard times. But we can't if you don't tell us about it. If you want to make that commitment for the very first time, we also can baptize you today. If you have any of these needs, please tell me during this next song as we stand and as we sing.